Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. You haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 6 of season 7, it's called Phantasms. It was directed by Patrick Stewart, written by Brandon Braga, and aired back on October 25th, 1993. In this one, as the Enterprise sits adrift in space from an unknown warp engine problem, Data's dream program leads to apparently aberrant behavior. It's a very vocab-heavy description that Wikipedia is giving me. Anyway, Dan is here to talk about this one. We're going to talk about Phantasms, the Data Dream episode, part two, after Birthright, part one. Phantasms with Dan right after this.
Delicious.
What kind of cake are you eating?
It is a cellular peptide cake with mint frosting. Would you like a bite?
No, thank you. Excuse me, Mr. Worf.
Aren't you going to answer that, Mr. Data?
Sir?
That damn ringing. Answer it, will you?
Yes, sir.
Please identify yourselves. I must ask what you were trying to out.
Be quiet.
Dan, welcome back to the podcast. And I don't mean for things like this to happen. It's just kind of the mystery of the universe. But you got another Patrick Stewart directed episode. Are you excited about that?
I didn't see you enter the room because I was preparing a peptide cake. Because I know how much you love peptide cake with
mint frosting.
With mint frosting.
As Worf is so pleased to say.
Pull up a chair and have some some head juice.
Have some brain juice.
Yeah.
That one didn't make sense to me because Crusher's arm didn't have anything to do with that end result. You know what I mean? The bug was on her arm, but it didn't really mean anything. Anyway, you guys, if you are unaware, we're going to be talking about Phantasms, which is a season, I think this is the fifth episode of season 7, I'll say it correctly in the intro. But Dan, you're joining us again off of, I think the last one you did was A Fistful of Data's.
Damn right.
You did Rightful Heir while I was out.
Rightful Heir. Oh, man, did we ever do Rightful Heir.
You did. And so I appreciate you covering for me while I was out there. And now we're going to talk about a Brandon Braga episode directed by Patrick Stewart. So, how do you want to start? Where do you want to take this one from?
Besides the fact that it's the Twin Peaks episode of... it's more like The Simpsons does the Twin Peaks episode of TNG. It's very surreal, very heady, which I want to appreciate. But I think we should just talk for a second about whether this is a character episode or not, because I think that's my biggest problem with it overall.
I'll start that. That's a good place to start. Excellent. Good point. That's why we had you back. It's a Brandon Braga episode, right? So Braga is not particularly known for his character work. He's more of like a high concept. He's done Cause and Effect. He did Identity Crisis. He's done a bunch of other the Timescape one, I think, was him, maybe. He does these sort of very science fiction-y, very high concept takes on things. And he's not really known for getting into the characters, which if you guys have heard the previous episodes of the podcast, Clay was starting to have a meltdown because the show is not really approaching its characters in a way that he wants to, and which I kind of agree that in season 7 they should be at this point.
Right.
And that...
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, and that's all just to wrap up by saying this episode features a lot of character work in it, which I think Clay would appreciate, although I don't know if it's the right episode for that kind of character work.
Well, here's the thing. First, let's say that I don't want Clay to have a nervous breakdown.
Sure.
That's step one. I mean, that's fair. I think we can all agree that Clay not running naked down the street is important to all of us. And certainly not over Star Trek, maybe over like a small business loan or, you know, something important to the course
of his
life.
At least Deep Space Nine.
Right, you know, at least Deep Space Nine. At least first contact, something that we can all agree is important.
Right.
But, you know, as a, you know, the classic 90s syndicated television show, like your Xenas and your similars, right, that you could probably put TNG into, right? It was that classic Saturday afternoon kind of serialized just sort of block of shows type TV show. There's no overarching narrative other than like, well, they're in space and then they're not in space, but they're still in space and it's most of the same people, you know? It predates the era that we're in now. So if nothing else, that should just mean that at a certain point, especially in season 7, oh my God, I looked at the episode count by now and they're on like the 160 something episode. Now is when you just start, if you have no overarching narrative, you just have to start making it happen and just go character by character. I mean, I don't see a real incentive to do otherwise. I don't see what would stop them. And what really pissed me off about this episode, what really made me want to run naked down the street, was that it gives you the false assumption that it's going to be a character episode. I mean, talk more about this because this is sort of where I started to really think about it, was that it's not so much that it's a character episode, but it's a type of episode that I've noticed they do a lot, which is the what if blank didn't have blank, like, or what if blank stopped working. So it's less like, well, how does Data's mind work? And it's more like, well, what if Data stopped functioning properly? That's not episode. That's like high concept at its worst.
Right. Yes, I totally understand what you're talking about there, and I think that it ties into a what you're also talking about is kind of the weak point of the non-serialized nature, right? Where we've brought this up before with Data, where Data goes haywire, and at the end of 45 minutes, everyone acts as if nothing has gone wrong whatsoever. He attempted to murder a character in this episode who comes back at the end, Troy. And she has cake and she hands him the knife again and says, like, I trust you. And it's, you know, it was a funny ha-ha the first, like, five times that it happened. It's like, oh, they're doing it again. But by this time, it's a little bit odd that they really have no qualms with what Data does when he starts to break down.
Right.
And as interesting as it is for Data to be revealed to be the machine...
Right.
All this time, it stops making sense with how they react to him. And I agree that going into his mind is much more interesting, which is, I don't know if you remember the Birthright episode, but it's the one where he gets the dream program that they talk about in this episode.
Vaguely.
And I always I consider that episode to be the end of the Data storyline in terms of his character development over TNG.
Right. It certainly hits like a hard stop. And you see it as evidenced in such nonsensical moments as after he tries to kill Troy, the way that they respond to it is a polite conversation in the, is it in the ready room or it's
the
in
the conference room?
Yeah. In the conference room. And it's just like, this is an unstoppable killing machine that can also like take over the spaceship by, you know, by farting accident, you know, like if he sneezes, right, he can turn off the engines. So it's like, I don't know. It just, this is one of those things, and as I've said before, I'm not a magic xylophone guy. Like, I don't really try and nitpick this stuff, considering, you know, it's 20 years later.
Yeah.
But Jesus Christ, like, get a energy field or a prison cell or, like, a magnet or something to hold him down and just, I don't know, like, it's such a tame, and I know that goes back to that whole, like, oh, people don't have real conflicts in the Roddenberry future. It starts to get a little like silly and just a little lazy when you get into that sort of situation where it's like, first scene, he tries to kill someone. Scene after that, they're having a polite conversation. I just, you know,
It does. It wears you out at a certain point. And I feel like it's weird. You know, I talked with Clay about how it feels like the episodes are repeating, but it feels like we just watched Descent, right? Where Data goes crazy, and then he has a scene with Troy where he talks about, I liked killing the Borg, and you're supposed to be horrified. But the show doesn't want to touch on that at all. It just plays it for the moment of this is a disturbing moment, and then it abandons whatever that's supposed to mean for the long term. And in this episode, he does the same exact thing where he talks with Troy about it, and it's the same exact sort of, it doesn't end up meaning anything outside of what's going on. And it's just a... It's just such a... I've seen this before. I literally saw it 5 episodes ago. And you haven't changed anything going forward. And you're not willing to explore like why Data's dreams are kind of a weird thing. You're not willing to go into any of that stuff. It's just going to turn into a sort of surreal comedy. This episode's kind of a comedy too, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what when I'm like, when I started to see the dream sequences, which I was talking to Clay yesterday, and it was like, this feels a little bit like that time when all the nerds buy like a bag of weed together and they get kind of high and goofy things happen. It's just like the way that this is written, and they're just like, it's what someone thinks that a drug trip is like, writes a drug trip that's never done drugs. It's like, right. Or someone who's never watched like a, you know, an episode of Twin Peaks writes about like,
Someone who's never dreamed.
Right.
This is Data's interpretation of a dream.
So I guess in that way it's kind of... Okay. I guess in that way it is kind of effective because it's like the most unimaginative dream... It's like if someone wrote the dream code for someone else, then I suppose it does do that job well. It's like if you took every TV trope and put them in someone's brain. Okay, fine. I will relent and give it that. But it does just become like almost farcical, I guess. Like it goes beyond comedy into something else.
Well, I mean, in Birthright, that was a point of Data's dream. It's commented on in the episode. They're like, this dream sucks. But they're like, oh, it's because Data is dreaming the dream.
Right.
Which is a nice self-aware moment for the show. Here, he's not really doing that. And the dream sequence stuff is the main point of this episode, but it's kind of a high concept thing where he's like, Brannon Braga strings along a bunch of other storylines that they don't really serve any point. They're just there to sort of waste time. Like there's the Picard needs to go to a banquet that he doesn't want to go to. Geordi is the tables turned and is now a ladies' man who has to beat him off with a stick, apparently.
Oh, God. The more we talk about this, the more little chips start to appear in this one. It's a little bit death, but like, it's a little bit death by a thousand paper cuts.
Yeah.
But not like in a way where it's like, I wanted to succeed. And I want to talk a little more about that because it starts to at least buy into its own idea of like, fine, Troy is going to dive into this a little bit. And it's somewhat of a Data character episode, but then suddenly it's not. And it's about a little alien leech thing. and the Geordi, I don't even know. My brain is like a whirl with criticism right now. And I'm not trying to, it's just like, this one feels a little more roughshod than a lot of the other episodes in so many ways.
When you watched it, right, for this thing, when it was over, what was your state of mind? I think it's one of those episodes for me. Were you like happy with it when it was over and then you started thinking about it, or were you just watching it the whole time going, what the hell is going on?
I was pretty happy with it because I like that they were at least attempting to do something with Troy, and it made sense for Troy to sort of try and help discover what a android's dreams would be.
Yep.
But then as I sat there and thought about it, also as I endured the next episode, not to jump ahead an entire recording, but and I started to really marinate on it, I was like, wait a second. That wasn't satisfying at all.
It's a tricksy one.
It didn't, because it just didn't commit to the premise of being weird. Like, if you're going to have a no-stakes show with no narrative that jumps from one episode to the other, just be weird. Who cares? Just do it. Just try it. Just,
yep.
You know, especially in what year was this? 1993?
93 or 94. Yeah.
There's never been lower stakes in terms of people remembering from episode to episode than there were in 1993. So, you know, try. But they didn't try. They did the opposite of try.
I mean, how much of that do you think comes down to, we talked before, you did Fistful of Datas, which was a Patrick Stewart directed episode. You know, Patrick Stewart, great actor, pretty awful director of television, I think it needs to be said.
Yeah.
His episodes, he's done Suddenly Human, In Theory, Fistful of Datas, and this one are his four. And they're all very poor. Like, Fistful of Datas was sort of unforgivably poorly directed because it's a Western and he didn't take advantage of any of it. This one, I don't feel he abuses the weirdness that needs to go on in the dream stuff to keep you a little bit more interested in it. It really feels like he just stood everybody in 10 forward and moved the camera between tables to them. And it feels so lackluster and uninspired in the directing front.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Putting aside artistic ability, because I think we both agree that, like, the camera moves, just the blocking of it is pretty boring. It's not even bad. It's just the most straightforward TNG blocking and direction.
I mean, the craziest he gets is a fisheye lens when it's, like, obviously in the dream, which is, you know, which is pretty cliche at this point, but it's what he does.
Well, he's a classically trained actor, and I believe the first thing they teach you is that when you're in a dream sequence, you have to rent a fisheye lens and bring it to the set that day. I believe that's Shakespeare said that.
Yeah, that's Shakespeare one.
Come on, Wes, that's basic Shakespeare. But at least with Fistful of way back in old cowboy town there, they committed, not only did they commit to the cowboy idea, but it was a fundamental element of the entire episode. And I don't mean because it had a lot of camera time in the Wild West space. It was just that it actually helped function, create the function of the episode itself, of the narrative arc. There was a reason for it to be. Here, it's a little bit like, I get it, but it just didn't get the same due that the cowboy universe did in the other episode.
Yeah. You have a little bit more of like a guiding hand with the Western stuff. You know what it's supposed to be like. Like, this needed more of a, you know, like, we mentioned, goddamn, Twin Peaks. But this is like the David Finch. This is the David Lynch TNG episode, right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, that's the one that, like, if you were picking a director, it'd probably be Lynch to do this one.
Right.
Because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and it doesn't need to. It just needs to be weird for the sake of being weird on some level.
Yeah.
And I think if you got... That comes down to the scripting, but, like, I know TNG has to do the aliens are the cause of this type thing, but I think it's pretty much a part of the show at this point. But I feel like this episode didn't need that to be happening. Although I don't know how they would get out of the narrative other than these little leech aliens are causing Data to do stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I'm not going to attempt to, you know, rewrite the episode, but I will say that I don't think that they needed to have the alien twist in there. It could have been a simple malfunction of the dream thing, the concept of a non-human life form dreaming in itself is interesting, and like whether they had chosen even Worf to do it, because he's just an entirely different species, would be interesting on its own.
Yep.
But, you know, there could have done plenty with, you know, Data and his dreaming, and that could have been the cause and problem with anything here, because it's a handwritten code by one crazy old man. I don't think that the alien thing versus it just being a flaw in the programming of his ability to dream would be just as good. You know what I mean? It's like, I know what you're saying. They get into this like, well, it's always got to be aliens.
Right.
The kids love aliens. Give them aliens.
I make just, them leeches. Yeah,
yeah. No, I know. Kids today like leeches, so make them leeches. I don't know, man. I feel like it's too
like esoteric if it isn't some direct cause of, you know, what's going on. Like, if it's not aliens, they would say that it's like some kind of, you know, particle beam out in space caused Data to go haywire, that kind of thing. There has to be like an external cause. And I think it comes down to what we were talking about earlier, is that otherwise it just makes Data seem unhinged in a certain way. Like, he could just go crazy at any particular point. There's nothing people can do to stop him. So they need some like loose wire in him, basically. Although I don't think the episode is really even particularly clear about why this interaction is happening.
Right.
Data can just see the aliens for some reason, and now he's dreaming about them.
But that part, I think that's okay. Because like, if they had committed to that, and that had been just more that, okay, they did commit to that part, and that was good, and that it was a clear arc in the narrative that somehow these things were in his brain, or he was seeing them, and the way they manifested was a group of grizzled Victorian era prospectors or something like that.
Yeah.
That part was fine. I don't know. I guess it, in that way, it served a good purpose, and that it helped us understand the flaw, or understand that we're going to hang out with these leech creatures, or I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm like awash in a sea of ambivalence at this point in terms of trying to figure this one out.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I probably sound, I'll talk about some things that I like, because I don't want to.
Yeah, let's get positive.
Yeah, I've been negative with season 7, and I know that's the cliche, and I'm trying to stay as objective as possible, even though, you know, I'm being told that you can't be objective with this stuff, but you need to. I'd like to think about, I don't really know, like, what, have you followed or watched any of the other season 7 ones besides the ones that we're talking about today?
I watched Gambit Part 1 and 2.
More 1 and 2. Did you agree with what me and Clay were talking about in terms of how it fit into Season 7? Or I think I was saying it more because I've seen all the episodes at this point. What's your sense so far of Season 7? Like, what does it feel to you about all these episodes? I have a certain feeling about them at this point.
It feels a little bit like they're running out of ideas. But it also feels like when you let the actors be the characters, they get very familiar with it. And I do think that there are good moments of that. And I think that's important to reiterate that with Troy and Troy discussing dreams with Data, like all of that is good. Like that's very good. And that's what the two of them, that's the relationship that they should have had for 6 or 7 seasons or whatever already.
Right.
Like, that's important. Like that's really good. That's the chin scratching that I'm here for, is to like think about things like that. Because it is, no, I mean, it's really interesting. It's like, what would happen if your entire ability to dream was written out by someone else? You inherited it. It was not something that you could develop. And how does a therapist, a psychologist, I forget what her actual, a counselor, how does she work with that? How does she interact? Like, that's really good. Like, I liked those parts a lot. And that gave me hope for the episode, was those parts. Less so the surreal. Like, I could have almost done without the surreal stuff if it was just those really good moments of interaction, those little bits of character work. And I see a lot of those. There were a lot of those in Gambit 1 and 2. So there's things I like. I'm positive. I'm straining to be positive.
No, I agree. And I think that the strongest parts of all the season 7 episodes have been the character moments. Like, my favorite of this one is, because it continues, I love Data and Worf pairings at this point. When Worf takes the cat is maybe one of the top 3 funniest scenes that the show has ever, like, legitimately funny.
Right.
I will feed him.
And then the little cat. The little sneeze on the way, like, it's the, right. they're it's almost like they're getting better at these small moments, but they're getting a little bit, they're getting much less skilled with the overarching narrative.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. I think you've clarified, like, the sci-fi storylines now seem much weaker than the character interactions, and the character interactions are getting good enough to a point where the show is starting to feel a little bit melodramatic at points, which is weird, but it's really just because they're sort of shooting. The characters are now getting settled into feeling more emotional and like friendly with each other, which is something brand new because we're used to the sort of bureaucratic interactions that they've had for six seasons. So it feels a little bit soap opera-y sometimes when they're talking to each other.
But I think that's important because they're running low on what seem to be strong narratives, certainly strong hour-long narratives.
Yeah.
And I got to say, in a lot of ways, the direction and the art direction of the episodes is really falling off. I don't know if that's because people are moving on to start Deep Space Nine or they're just moving on in general. You know how these like these long-standing shows, they change staff. But a lot of that stuff is really falling off. And we can talk when we go back to negative about that sort of stuff in this episode.
What did you think? What artistic? I can see the direction and stuff because I think everyone at this point in season seven is overworked, including the writers and everything. So I was just wondering what you thought about like the art direction that you mentioned that you thought was weaker.
Well, for one thing, they have a lot of sort of hastily done special effects in this one.
Sure.
I was watching this one. I was watching the remastered version of this episode, and you know when Data opens his chest to answer the telephone, you can clearly see because it's widescreen,
or
it's slightly wider screen, like standard plus. You can see him reach around the dummy in uniform.
Yes, so, yeah. It looks like the hand is just reaching from stage left
into
the chest. Yeah, yeah.
But that's what I thought originally was that it was just a stage left sort of move into frame, but then when I watched it a second time, I noticed that he's actually standing behind it, and you can see his body behind it. It's just the cake and all that sort of stuff, and her head coming out of the cake, et cetera, whatever. It's fine. It's just you can see that any effort that's left is being focused on these character moments, and I think they're really good, and I think this had a lot of good Troy Data stuff.
Yep.
And it is helping me get through the rest of the episode. And that's where that ambivalence comes from, because I liked a lot of that stuff. And I will remain positive about this episode because of that.
I liked the Geordi Data stuff. It doesn't really make sense with Geordi's character that we've seen so far. But I thought it was something the show has never done before, which I was kind of surprised by. And you know, that storyline doesn't really resolve itself. She kind of saves the day by taking Picard away. And, you know, that's fine. But it was just kind of a unique type situation that felt very Braga-esque. He'll do that. Like, it ties in with it. That storyline didn't resolve. And I feel like Picard's motivation is sort of unclear to me. He obviously doesn't want to go to this thing, right?
Right.
Why is he trying the entire time to get there when it doesn't seem like there's any sort of punishment in store for him if he doesn't make it?
Because
the Asian admiral is going to like give him some snide remarks over subspace communications or whatever.
The long lost Asian Murray brother. I think that those things are good. Being willing to like wiggle pieces off of the format the way that that does and the way that the Geordi stuff in this episode does, I think is good. I think that shows at least some maturing in the way that they put these together. It shows less rigidity.
Yeah.
It's like I almost don't care that neither the Geordi as ladies' man or Picard as tardy party guest. Like,
yes.
They don't really advance the story, but they're at least willing to show us something of the characters themselves and some ups and downs. Like, I will take that.
Right.
At this point, I will take that as a positive, even if it probably took screen time away from some piece of the larger narrative that could have improved the overall episode.
Right.
It also just feels very 90s television to have these like character breaks like that, where it's just a random moment between a couple of buds just budding out.
Right. there's always the unsatisfying sitcom B story that right. never really resolves itself and is right. just there to basically fill the 5 minutes that they couldn't fill with main storyline.
Exactly.
And that's kind of what this is. Like, I don't think those storylines are bad or anything, but it's just kind of a... I always tend to focus on writing because it's the thing I'm most interested in. It just feels yeah. like it's unfinished. Like, if he had another day to figure out how to wiggle them together, it would have paid off that much more. just when writing is tight like that, it makes everything seem that much better.
Oh,
somehow.
I agree. But I think at this point, 7 seasons in, 160-odd episodes in, I almost am more willing to accept wobbly writing if it means they at least try something new. You know what I mean? Like, there's right, no... Right. The stakes are completely gone at this point. This is like the third to the last day of school senior year sort of situation. It's like the yes. fact that they're even putting it together this well, that it's not just like a bunch of B-roll footage that they edit together, is pretty
impressive.
Shades
of Grey Part 2.
Yeah, exactly.
26 episodes of that.
Right, that it's not just, you know, exterior shots of the ship blowing up for 45 minutes and then... Yeah. The episode's over.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. I think we talked a good talk about Phantasms, which is a good title. I like that title. But we will take a break. I'm going to play an audio clip. Me and Dan are going to come back. We're going to have our final thoughts and ratings for Phantasms.
Will you take care of Spot for me?
Your animal.
I'm afraid if I have another waking dream, I might injure him.
Of course. Spot, come here.
Unlike a canine, Spot does not respond to verbal commands. Goodbye, Spot. He will need to be fed once a day. He prefers feline supplement number 25.
I understand.
And he will require water. And you must provide him with a sandbox. And you must talk to him. Tell him he is a pretty cat. And a good cat.
I will feed him.
All right, Dan. It's time to give our rating here. I'm kind of interested. I don't know if I can peg you for what you're going to give on our scale of 1 to 5 for this one. So why don't you start us off? I'm interested. Let us know your sort of overall opinion and let us know on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being the best, 1 being the worst, what you thought about this one.
Well, I sat by a 10 forward window this morning with a cup of brain juice and really thought this out. And I'm going to still give this a 3.5, which is a surprisingly high score. Considering that the narrative itself is poor at best. I mean, I would call it junk. Because it devolves from character into problem of the week. But what it does do is gives a lot of good character moments that I think are important and start to inform how they deal with characters into the next, into Deep Space Nine and et cetera, where it gets a little more character friendly. And I'm glad to see that this is where that starts to take shape.
Sure.
So I will be Mr. Positive Pete. I'm going to turn things around on this podcast. I'm Positive Picard. I want to just help us all turn over a new leaf so we don't finish out TNG after all of this work that collectively all of us have done.
I know.
We don't end on like the most shit in a shoe vibe. But I do think that this has merit. I do think it has merit, even though it's like a fifth grader's version of a David Lynch movie.
Right. Yeah, And just so we know, people, we do have All Good Things coming. It does come eventually. I think I would like this one more if, like I've said about a lot of the other season 7 episodes, if I didn't feel it was just retreading an episode I've already seen before. Like, I feel Data's dreaming is done a million times more interestingly in Birthright, where it takes a very... The dream sequences in that one are much more dreamlike and less sort of a one-to-one ratio of here's something happening in the real world, here's a weird interpretation that Data is seeing of it. And I think that's much more like a poetic take on Data's dreaming sequence. This feels more just like a monster of the week, like horror kind of themed episode with a weird comedy backbone that's balanced out by a brutal attempted murder scene, which is really kind of shockingly violent for this show. Just sort of caught off guard by. I think it's just, I really love the character moments, as we've talked about. That's the best part of the show. The narrative doesn't really hold up for me, and I don't enjoy watching this one. So I'm going to give it a 2 out of 5.
That's fair. And I'm happy to provide the hot take, and I'm happy to provide the pointlessly positive view on this one. It's just, in the end, there are lots of episodes of this show where I'm like violently ill when I'm done watching it, including the next one that we're going to do. but yeah, I can mess with this one, and I would watch it again. I would watch it while cleaning, which is my general TNG standard. It's like, will I vacuum to this? Yeah, I'll vacuum to this.
Absolutely. Oh, here comes the speech. I'll just turn that power suction light on and get these dust bunnies out of the way. It's over. Yeah. I can see that. This is not a you know, I used to when I was younger and this wasn't all available on Netflix and everything, I had a big one of my buddies in high school rented the Netflix DVDs like one at a time, and he burned all of us copies of them. It took about 7 years to get the entire series, but I had the big like CD binder that with the black like vinyl binder that I would flip the discs through. And this is one that would probably catch me if I had seen all the other stuff a lot, this would be one of the sort of second tier ones that I would go to, I think.
Yeah.
But critically thinking about it, I'm not sure it holds up as well as I thought it did.
To use your original rating system, I will say that this is one I would enjoy, but I would never, ever recommend it to a Star Trek novice, ever.
Right. Yeah. So that's a 3, basically. So you're right on track with it. And in my opinion, it's one with some problems in it that if it was fixed, it would bump it up to a pretty average episode. Cool. Well, Dan, thank you very much for coming on.
Excellent. Thank you.
You'll be back with Dark Page, which we'll be talking about in a couple days on the podcast anyway. Guys, thank you for listening. If you enjoy the content, you're on YouTube, like and comments. Appreciate it. If you're on iTunes, rating and review, you can rate and review on all the podcasters out there. Facebook.com/ThePenskePodcast. You can go there, like and a comment. And Patreon.com. You go to Patreon.com/ThePenskePodcast and you support us for a couple dollars a month, less than the price of a cup of coffee. You can get some exclusive content. We talk about movies. We do podcasts that only people on Patreon can get. We talk about TV shows, et cetera, not limited to Star Trek. And that's it. Phantasms, we're done. And we'll see you in a couple days with Dark Page, the final appearance of Lwaxana Troi. Are you ready, Dan?
Ugh.
See you then.